This upcoming concert season will be all about the boots, and Tecovas is your stop for the best in Western style. Tecovas has seasonal and limited edition offerings this spring and summer, including men's and women's boots, apparel, hats, bags, and more. All Tecovas boots are made by hand in a time-honored tradition with timeless styles that are always on trend. And Tecovas has first wear comfort with little to no break-in period. It's hard to find this level of comfort paired with this level of style. Stop by your local Tecovas store, have a complimentary drink or two, that's WCB style, and shop new styles. The smell of fresh leather and friendly staff are at your service. Many stores even have leather custom branding to make your boots truly personalized. And with regular live music and events, there's no in-store experience like it. If you can't make it into a store, just visit tecovas.com. That's T-E-C-O-V-A-S.com. They offer free shipping on all boots, as well as free returns and exchanges, and ship right to your door. Go to tecovas.com and find your new favorite pair of boots today.
Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
Hello and welcome to the Publicly Challenged Podcast. I'm your host, Luke Oswald, and I hope you join me on my quest for knowledge to become a better public land hunter, angler, and forager. Stick with this and who knows, maybe we will learn something together.
Welcome back, everyone, to another wonderful episode of the Publicly Challenged Podcast. We are here with me and Luke Oswald, the co-host, and Eduardo Garcia of Montana Mex, who just informed us that he has about 400 elk outside of his window right now, and me and Luke are both salivating over here. Hey, Eduardo, how's it going?
It's going well. It's springtime in the Rockies. What can I say? If you're, you know, near a farmer's pivot, you're going to have animals in there looking for their fresh green up. So it's springtime over here. It's a nice time, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Glad to have you, and got to say, Bozeman's beautiful, but it's horrible. Don't move there because you really just, you won't like it. So, but.
Yeah. Is that where you're at, is Bozeman, Eduardo?
Southwest is home. Yeah, the Southwest region of Montana, and has been since like 86. Yeah, no, from California originally. My older sister was born in Mexico, and then my twin brother and I were born in California before we moved to Montana as little kids. Don't have too much of a memory of the early stuff, so I usually just sort of claim what I resonate with the most, which is I think been here for 37 years now or something. Feels like home.
Yeah. So just out of curiosity, where's your sister from, or where was she born in Mexico?
Oh, yeah. So my father, she was born in, she was born in Cancun, which is in the very tip of the Yucatan Peninsula. My dad and mother were living on an island right offshore called Isla Mujeres. So that was was their home. Yeah.
That is amazing. Oh, incredible. Yeah. So the spring there is going on right now. What's the temperature like? And I ask this because phenology across the United States is pretty weird. A lot of people know about the phenology, like north-south thing, right? Like it's gonna warm up first in the south and it's gonna creep north. But like a lot of people are less knowledgeable about the fact that actually phenology creeps westward. So like your spring starts earlier than my spring, even though you may in fact be far colder than I am.
By virtue of how we are, the surface life interacts with light rotationally.
It's all to do with wind. Essentially, it's like wind and latitude and sunlight and everything. So phenology warms things west to east, and south to north.
Interesting.
Isn't that interesting? Because the light comes east to west, typically.
Yeah.
Unless you're waking up really hungover or something. And and so it warms us east to west.
Yeah.
And yet it warms Earth west to east.
Yeah.
Like wind. Yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. So like you're already starting to see then like lots of plant growth, I assume.
Well, you know, it depends. Montana is a varied state. It covers such a large landmass that it truly exists in this semi-arid central to eastern type of a chunk, if you mm-hmm. will. And you can't have all frosting and sponge, right? So like the just different than the Great Plains. Submit to the mountains, you get the Rocky Mountain front, right? And just so depending on what side of the front is going to be different, right? So, and then of course, anything on the west side of the divide has its own moisture. All of our weather is coming west to east, as you mentioned. So predominant wind direction here is always out of the southwest and for this part of the range. And yet, you know, it's kind of like on the Yellowstone, we know that you'll see morels way earlier downstream, right? Than you will upstream. So, yeah.
That's awesome.
So I got to ask you, I mean, springtime is obviously coming. It's here or going to be here. Turkey season is picking up. You know, foraging is starting to pick up. What are you most excited for? And I mean, are you going out turkey hunting? Are you going to obviously morels, burn morels, you know, all that good stuff?
Yeah. So I have never turkey hunted.
Oh,
right.
Yeah.
And it's interesting. The more I spend time with anybody and the more, especially if we look into hunting in the outdoor recreational genre, we'll find out that my focus has been super acute. Like, I think as a 15-year-old, I looked up at the specific place where I grew up. And I looked at all these drainages and all these tributaries and all of this water flow. And I thought, gosh, I'll never make it to all of them, even if I start now. But nonetheless, I just committed to that zone and those things, right? To just sometimes, like a protractor, is that the right tool? I'd walk out my back door and just do a loop. And the next day I do a similar loop, but 50 feet over. And then I do it again, 50 feet over, and I'd cover sort of a hill like that. And it's incredible the amount of detail that you'll come to understand and witness by that type of motion on a landscape. And so for that, we don't have a lot of turkeys, and nor did they have, you know, do we have tags in that zone. So I never grew up looking for the birds, Hungarian partridge, grouse, sure, you know. So anyway, love turkey. Think people should eat more of it. So coming up this spring, you know, I want to play with vinegars this year and start learning that process, right? Like the things you miss in the winter are the things that I want to, I don't know, either just learn to let go of because eat them seasonally. That's the rhythm. That's the trick. Or how to elongate them for beneficial things like turning a super choke cherry crop into a vinegar. You know, like that.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Like that pick you up all non-fruit harvesting season long. Is what I most look forward to in the spring because I get to try another. It's like part 2, 3, 5, however many years you've been looking to food in that way. In springtime, it's just sort of time to, whether you're seeding in your garden, spend the winter marinating about, wow, okay, well, this year we're going to try this. I was sitting with a farmer today that says, I tried 30 different patty pans. And now I know it grows really great in my yard. I'm going to grow 3 this year. She's so fired up about them. And so springtime specifically, is there a plant or crop? No. I wanted to be more purposeful looking for cottonwood buds on fallen tree. So unfallen, right?
Yeah.
Not bending them, nothing. And so the hunt is so, it's what you make it. It's what you want it to be. It's so choose your own adventure, in my opinion. So, that's currently my spring foray is all the usual suspects, the Morels, the Nettles, saying goodbye to the Crests when it gets hot, whatever it is. And yet, I don't know. I'm keen to pick up new challenges too. So, you know, I think that's why I follow guys like Clay.
Yeah.
Like, all right, Mike, that's cool. What do you do with that? You know?
Yeah. That's so cool. So what kind of crests are you guys harvesting out there? But just out of curiosity, like, are you talking winter crests or water crests?
I believe it's water crests.
Just right in the water?
But here, yeah, right in the water. Yep. Usually okay. Springs. A lot of them are springs I've known about since I was a kid. And so I kind of just go, it's like going back to the same spot and seeing how it's moving on the hill or wherever it is. We're looking for cattail right now because we're working on a recipe. Just as a collective team of a very small crew that work with me in my business at Montana Mex. The idea came up recently of just other ways to use cattail as a Paul Revere type ingredient, meaning like a heralding type ingredient. So cattail, at least the ones that I'm going to want to cook for you or me, you know, really going to want to make sure that our water is clean, wherever that is, right? Mm-hmm. It can be murky, it can be muddy, it can be pondy, but what's the filtration feel like? You know, is it out of a polluted river or this? Or, and that, so that's the further hunt, is trying to learn that kind of deal. And then saying, once we have a clean product, all right, what do we do with this cattail this year? You know, you just get this window. Yeah. So tiny.
So I have a friend that also lives in Montana that just asked me about cattails. And and
nice.
It's kind of funny that you say that. He was like, where do I look? And I'm like, I've never been to Montana. Or that's not true. I've passed through Montana, but I've never been there. But I said, maybe try, you know, looking in wetlands on like Onyx. You know, that's what I would do. I would just scout for wetlands on Onyx and just look there. But I don't also know like how prolific cattails are in your region. Are they very prolific?
I think they're all over the show. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I see them on most of our watersheds. Small. I mean, if a duck would land there, a cattail would grow there.
Okay. And just out of curiosity, maybe you won't know this, but you know what species you got there?
No, but now I want to know. Now I'm going to look. I'm just going to write down. Little did we know this is going to be a podcast with Eduardo, but really I was going to take some homework assignments from this.
So like the typical species that grow in North America are like Typha latifolia. That's the common cattail. Typha angustifolia. That's narrow leaf cattail. And then there's Typha ex glauca. That's the mix of the two. And then you kind of get
a hybrid.
These, yeah. And then the southern species is like Typha domingensis. And, all of them are edible, you know.
All of them are edible. How many of those have you had, Clay?
I've eaten 3 of the 4. Never had the southern species before.
Did you note a difference as you apple versus, you know, or a pear varietal? Or...
Yeah, so like the biggest difference being that Typha angustifolia is the narrowleaf cattail, and it's a lot skinnier. So like it's going to be a lot less meaty. You know, like if you pick, what are you looking for right now? Cattail shoots?
Yeah, for this dish, we're looking for young shoots. Yep.
Yeah, so like latifolia is going to be just so much more substance. Mm. Like you're gonna pick a shoot, and it's going to be actually worth picking the thing. You know.
You want big shoots, people? Latifolia.
Yeah, latifolia.
Yeah. is that narrow leaf or broad leaf? Or
that's the broad leaf cattail. Yeah.
Okay.
And, and you know, what's even funnier here. We can get really nerdy is that, there is some thought that narrow leaf cattail is invasive. And then there's some people think that narrow leaf cattail is native. It's not solved yet. It's a Yeah.
What does it matter at this point if it's on the landscape? You know what I mean? How many times have we gone over this and people get so angry about it? Like we were discussing earlier about people just blasting people on social media about whether or not something is invasive or native or belongs on the landscape or doesn't. I mean, if it's already here and you can't, like, if you can't get rid of it, then you might as well learn to work with it.
Yeah, you know? I mean, I agree. I mean, I don't think we should be introducing new stuff.
No.
But we should learn to accept what's already here. I agree with that completely.
Is there a non-acceptance of what's here?
Oh yeah, there's a huge thing going on. There's people freaking out right now over a guy who is like, planting things in city parks in Utah, like edible plants for people. He was actually doing like really nice stuff, not planting in wilderness, but he's like shaking like cilantro seeds and stuff onto the trails, and you know, just being like a kind of goofy guy. And then you had people freaking out at him for like endangering black-footed ferrets and stuff like that. You know,
heads were exploding. They weren't just
they
like,
can't eat. They can't eat cilantro.
I guess. Yeah.
Apparently, yeah. I don't know.
Wow.
I mean, the guy talked, so he even had to put out an apology, a statement, because people were just attacking him so bad that he had to put out an apology statement. And then he had multiple phone calls from the Department of Wildlife, Department of Natural Resources of Utah Parks. And had multiple conversations with them, and all of them came to this consensus that maybe there was better plants that he could have been putting out there, but at the same time, he wasn't introducing something that wasn't already on the landscape.
Yeah.
So, I mean...
Yeah.
You know, listen, I'm sure folks had a hard time with John Chapman when he was rolling around tinkering with a ton of apple seeds and rolling around the landscape. He was known as a coyote of sorts, and yet for any home that really took him in, you know, the spirit he left was that of life is hard, right? And through merriment and celebration and joy, alcohol being a catalyzing part of the ritual, you know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Not the daily driver, but as a ritual, it was an enlivening part of people's lives to like the hardship, right? How hard it is. So I don't know. I look at this guy and do your research. Don't kill any ferrets, but know, like trying to feed some people is not a bad thing.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I think his intentions were good. He was just slightly ill-informed, and people really went after him.
But either way, the cattail, the non-native cattail, or potentially native, we're not quite sure yet, is just as edible as the native cattail.
Yeah. All right. Nice. And have you gone through the other cycle of options in pounding the root out, harvesting the starch, making a cattail flour? Have you worked all the way through that vertical?
So I would love to tell you that I have, except for we have wild rice and acorns and all these other starches.
Wonderful starches.
So like I've never ever once felt the need to do that. I've just like kind of been like,
can't you use, it's not really a starch, but just collect the pollen. It's way easier to collect that than pound out the shoots and use that for the starch.
Yeah. So cattail pollen is awesome. And if you have big enough stands that you can actually go out and collect cattail pollen, highly suggest it. You'll make some really cool stuff.
We're on it this year. Yeah. Nice. There's not enough time. Yes. Yeah, so, we'll try where we are.
So you have a TV show that Luke here told me before we started talking that him and his wife just binge watched your show.
We did. Nice. So I didn't know you had a show. And then I didn't know. I knew you had the product line and everything. And then I was like, oh, he's got a show now? Okay, you know, because I've been following you since like 2018, something like that, you know, like sometime after your hardship and all that kind of stuff. And I remember seeing, you know, your story come out, and we don't need to get into that because it's out there everywhere anyway, right? You know, but
fair point.
But, you know, I thought it was pretty cool, you know, and just followed you and thought the stuff you were doing and like the fact that nothing would. You know, and I'm sure that sometimes it probably got pretty hard for you, you know, but you didn't let it get you down and you kept going, which that I respect a lot. And
thank you.
Then seeing the show, I was like, oh, man, he's got a show. I knew he had like a whole product line and he was doing a lot of appearances. So then I saw the show and I'm like, OK, so my wife wasn't home and I subscribed to Discovery Plus so I could watch it. And she goes, you know, Magnolia Network is on HBO, right? And
yeah, I go, we got this, buddy.
I go, no, I didn't. And she goes, well, it is. So anyway, we started watching it. We binge watched almost all of it, season one and two. And I think I've only got like three episodes left or four episodes left on season two. So nice. Love it. And speaking nice. Of that, nice. I got to know about Thank your you. Kitchen, man. Let's
All the more reason why, like, I just had I known I would have just taken this upstairs.
No, it's cool.
I have to find some separation between life and work, and I built it out of so the kitchen. Hold on. Thank you.
Yeah, it's awesome, dude. It's awesome. Yeah,
I appreciate
it. Did you put
it.
That stove in though, like all that, the whole wall with all the stuff, or was like some of that there?
To those listening, this is context. I like to sleep. I like to lay down, chill out a little bit. I really appreciate the parts of my life that occur when I'm awake. And so I spend a lot of time in my kitchen, spend a lot of time outside. I spend a lot of time just being awake, living, right? Kudos and respect to everyone, wherever you find all of your therapies. Part of my therapy is just being active. And when I bought this place years and years ago, the kitchen was a nice kitchen by all accounts in the center of the home. And when I walked in, I felt like I was still on the boat. I worked as a yacht chef for 10 years. I'm in this kitchen and I'm kind of like, it's big, it's spacious, it's way bigger than a boat. And I'm still feel like I'm sort of looking at like all of that out there, you know, like the mountain and the this and the that. And I'm like, wait a minute. And so then I go to the back door of the home and it faces west, looking at all these 400 elk out here right now. And it's the back deck. And the realtor opens the door and she's like, and look at this deck, look at this view. I'm like, wow, look at this view. And I tore the deck off and put my kitchen there. And so now I get to sit in the view and cook. And so, you know, wow. I built the kitchen out of reclaimed materials harvested from the breadbasket of America, a lot of our wheat and grain mills here in Montana. And so I really tripped out and had a really good time building not only just a kitchen. I went from working as a yacht chef. You know, I can cook anywhere. There's a heartbeat and a mouth, you know. Mm-hmm. And cooking apple, like you could, like food is wherever you are. And yet my company Montana Mex was just fledging and starting. I was coming home from 10 years as a yacht chef and trying to figure out what being home as a 30-year-old meant. I'd left home at 20, never, you know, like had a tiny cabin, all of a sudden this, you know, larger home. And and so being in the kitchen, it was sort of part of my connection to a garden, regenerative food forest. It's about a third of an acre outside, and there's a root cellar under the kitchen. And so designing it was my way of saying, okay, I worked as a private chef for 10 years. My new foray is with my company Montana Mex. I was trying to launch a TV show, did not count on getting electrocuted in the process. And so all that remains is still the same. I want to share my message of food. I want to share how I love it. I want to share my relationship with it. And by doing so, it brings the best parts of me out in my life, which is pretty selfish in a great way. And so I should do this. This is net positive. And so building the kitchen was how we could shoot our marketing content for our company, Montana Mex. Also, you know, you're a chef. You're given the opportunity to build a kitchen. You're going to, you know, so it's really a blessing to be visually connected to wind, water, earth all day while I work. It becomes an intuitive part of how I approach mealtime, and it's really enriched me. And you know, I'm not saying this to any other degree than to inspire folks to really you know, go on an adventure with your mind and think of your kitchen as a very as like the engine of your car. Like, you know, like what are you putting it? Every time. I've brought so many groceries from the grocery store. You know how crazy it is to go to a grocery store? Like, it's like bink, 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 like hundreds of items into carts. Hundreds of things. You know, I'm trying to plan for a yacht, right? Months of traveling. And I have 7 trolleys up, and then you take them all out of the trolley. You put them on the conveyor. bleak, 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 bleak. It goes through. And then you put them all in a bag. I mean, wow. Yeah, I would touch the same box of something 50 times before I ever turned it into grits. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And so right now, one of the most beautiful things that I've discovered about our relationship with food is proximity. And so to have garlic, right? Yeah, I can't see it yet because it's only like this tall, but once it's big, I'll see it outside this window. And I'll probably be sitting here eating something with that garlic, and it will add meaning to my life that is beyond product and category. And I mean, pharmaceuticals, nothing can touch that kind of context, right? And so that's the purpose of the kitchen, the show, it's a kitchen. What we do here as a company is just trying to connect people to a relationship. It's worked for me. I mean, I see how fired up you are, Clay. It worked for you, you know, and I'm sure you too.
Yeah.
Luke, in your own connection with the outdoors and others that are joining here, like, we know the secret sauce. It's no turning back now.
Yeah. So that wood, I got to know about the wood. Like, was that a forethought that happened with the conception of the kitchen, or was that like partially, I mean, that's just amazing. I told my wife, I said, the whole wood stove with the hearth there like that. I said, if we ever build something, you know, that's going to be an integral part of my new kitchen.
Absolutely. Sure. Luke is giving me an easy plug. Go watch Big Sky Kitchen, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah. Anyone joining, watch Big Sky Kitchen. I think if you have Amazon Prime, which I don't know, a lot of people have that, seems, you can get it somehow through that, you know, subscription. So you may not even have to sign up for anything new. But you'll see the kitchen that we're talking about, and thank you for the compliments on it. It's part of the economics of food. It's even the space you create for yourself. You know, working as a yacht chef, I would every now and then work on a boat that was outfitting or rebuilding or brand new. And so you'd build the galley, the kitchen, and it seemed to always sort of be in the bowels and just down low and an afterthought in the design process. And right now, as a family, my family at large, we work in raw materials in some different categories, stone, hemp, fiber, fuel. And I don't know, I work in food, but I can't help but also just look at how our kitchens are built, and would love to see more like realty transactions with contractor development engagements centered on our health. Food as like the conduit. And so like, how can the kitchen be the billows, right? Like the lungs of our home. If you're building a grill into a home, it should just be de rigueur. You know, I built it because I wanted to cook over coals year round. And sometimes it's negative 40 and it's nuking, and that's not no bueno. I mean, it's an experience, you know? And so I think, that's why we built the grill in the kitchen and designed it as such, is so that it was interactive, it was engaging and experiential, even for me, you know, it's almost part of a bit of a prescription as a chef career, you know, 110 hours a week hitting it food focused. Gosh, all these other bits and pieces are definitely the tastiest part of this journey right now, right? For me, is how to food challenge the heck out of it every. Don't get me wrong, guys. I buy a hot dog at a gas station, no problem, no stress. I'm all about it. But I also just recognize I saw someone fermenting mustard seed recently, and I love mustard. I thought, okay, challenge. I want to wild harvest some mustard. I want to see, or even just buy it, but just engage. More engagement. That's it. Mm-hmm.
So you're talking about these vinegars and what you're going to do with the vinegars. Yeah. I'm kind of curious. Obviously, you're going to add them to dishes, but how are you going to actually discern what would complement, like what flavor or what you're going to use? You know, like what's the process? And like, oh, I need acidity. What am I going to use to brighten this? You know what I mean? Like, what would you pick? You know, for just like scenario wise, like you say you make choke cherry vinegar and you make this kind of vinegar, like how do you know which one would be the right one to complement? Just kind of experimentation, taste, or what?
Yeah, no, I am no savant. You're 100% right. It is literally monkey math. It's just finger in, as it tastes. That's how cooking is.
Yeah.
That's really the more we are tactile with it, the more we release ourselves from it having to be super structured. The more it becomes sort of genetic here, like the more it's just sort of like feel, right? You see people cook that when they're in love with it, they may be reading the recipe, but it's a different cadence altogether. And so with food, one of my favorite combos is raspberry and coffee. Don't know why. I love how those go together. And so I think a open door policy is my approach almost indefinitely with food. I have my interests. I'm gonna put hot sauce on everything, right?
Yeah.
I'm gonna probably want to add extra salt to everything, right? But when it comes to the pairings, my first step is actually the method of taking those sugars, taking that juice as a first order and supporting its transformation into something stable like a vinegar. That's like the first adventure for me, is just with anything. I say the choke cherry because there's piles of it everywhere. If I get it before the birds, or if I get it while the birds are eating, you know, some years I'm late and the close ones are knocked out. And so I just forego. There's elderberry aplenty. I'm always trying to figure out what to do more with in the elderberry realm. Elderberry is super soft. It's actually not that acidic. It's far more, very
bland.
Different. Yeah. You know, aromatic.
It gets very bright when you concentrate it, though. You know, it's mild, but it's bright. Like you know it's there. I don't know. I like elderberry. I love elderberry. So
yeah. So well, it's and then so playing with food in total order is it's not just the vinegars. Do you guys follow a gentleman out in California? Pascal.
Yeah. Pascal is actually a friend of mine. He's pretty cool. Yeah.
You know, so I mean he is an artist, right? Yeah. So I mean his work with the wild crafted clay, who we're referencing is a fellow in Los Angeles area who's made his a real focus this wild scavenging of readily available lesser even appreciated parts of our food systems, right? So like buds and shoots and seeds and even the clay under our feet. And it's really beautiful to watch his work. It's an absolute open sourced event, and he's a published author. So it's
what
I look forward to. What's his book?
Wild something terrier.
Wild crafted fermentation.
Mm-hmm. He's got multiple books, but that's his most recent, I think. Yeah.
Is a wild crafted cheese book.
Yeah, he's got all kinds of books. He is really he's actually like. I'm going to actually go back to something you said a few minutes ago. Like you kind of brushed it off like anybody can do the chef thing. And I kind of disagree with you. I think that and people like Pascal, you're like wizards. And, I've had years of experience. Like, so I love wild foods. I'm not a chef, and I do multiple events a year. Usually where I work with, I'll teach a foraging class and then I partner up with a chef and they cook all this stuff. And I'm constantly amazed at like what they come up with. Mm-hmm. And, I know you come up with some like real wacky things too, that I'm sure just taste wonderful. But I want to say one chef up here at one event years ago made a wild bergamot soda. So like a bee like a bee balm, you know?
Heck yeah.
And I thought at first, I was like, are you a madman? You know, I saw it on the menu and then I tasted it and I was like, this is amazing.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I guess like you, Pascal, like what you guys kind of embody to me is like more of an openness to try like wacky things and maybe fail. Whereas like I'm looking at things and I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't think I want to use this bergamot to make a soda because, like, I don't. Yeah. So I guess that's my opinion.
No, I appreciate it. I you know, you've got some Latin taxonomy down. I mean, that's your ace, you know, your latifolia, right? I think that our inspiration should be aplenty, you know, and having that open door policy, I think, is a evergreen part of regenerative inspiration. Just sort of like, okay, like what will amaze me today? And
brave anglers search for the one they call king, but who will take his throne? Tune in to Waypoint TV's Battle for Silver, Saturday, May 18th from 12 to 6 p.m. Eastern, presented by Abyss Battery. Waypoint TV. A life that has the stories to back it. A life to be proud of. It's a Winchester life.
Yeah, baby. 6'8 Western. Oh, mule deer, baby, right there.
Tune in every Tuesday at 7 p.m. Eastern on Waypoint TV.
Yeah, so in food, I feel right now a large part of what we do at Montana Mex is trying to understand where can we best be a solid equity distributor in our community, right, for whatever we're doing, and how can we inspire ourselves as an order of first person like business so that it just is a natural part of what we do. Right. Like it. And that's tricky. It's a very non-traditional approach to business from all corporate senses. Right. When you're trying to grow and work in marketing and shipping and product manufacturing. And what humbles us and also keeps us super enthused is the food itself. It, like, for any time where we find ourselves like, oh, where do we get, how do we find, where is it available? Going down the journey of catering or chefing or traditional cookery, the thing that makes life very interesting in a challenging way is, well, what's available to us and what is the most interesting journey we can take for this dish? And so collaboration is key, right? So having, we right now are trying to create more events, experiences, whether they're virtual. I'll open up my kitchen, join us, just to know that someone's cooking over there and starting to just simply feel movement connected to that source. Like, that's a win for us. And yet we talk about stuff like you're mentioning, Clay, where it's this combination where it's saying, okay, we're all going to go on the walk. What are you finding? Let's all learn. I'll add in if it's valid. And then having a chef turn their apron string on and say, great. What I see, and I think I can do with this, both sides learn. What a really beautiful place for effervescent type education, right? Like, I don't know anyone that wants to go sit and lecture, right? Sit and just have to listen. But to move and walk, well, seduction number one, to talk and share forever, a token of care, and that you can take that around the world with you. Three, feed people, everyone shows up, and then you can sort of just make it fun somehow with some, you know, some good old time banter, some music. It's called a party, you know, it's called a party. And when I watch the animals out here, when I watch the trees out here, when I'm in witness of it, it seems to be celebrating, even if it's in 40 mile per hour winds, even if it's super cold, you know, like, all of that. I always talk to my family about this. I just say, gosh, the more we can embrace this outdoor space and its elemental bits, our life will be enriched 100% through and through in multiples, because that exists without us. It literally exists indifferent to us. I just think when we can connect food to this outside space in any condition, even if we're buying our food from the grocery store, recognizing wind, recognizing sun, soil, water, and then contributing back to that to some fashion. Gosh, that's the coolest part of my business right now, is just trying to figure that out, like a menu, right? Mm-hmm. Hunting has gotten so fascinating for me. Just growing, you know, like I spent years just dogged, just 30 days, 60 days, as much as I could. And right now it's so consciously a part of my day that it doesn't crux, like, almost the crux is when I'm eating. That's sort of like the deepest crescendo of hunting right now for me is when you're eating and giving that reverential. If you add up every hour, the elk as a great example, because we've been talking about it, put into creating this shank. Holy smokes. I put in 1/100th of time. Yeah. 1/1000th of time. I am so honored to like be here with this.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like, I watched Dune with my wife. She's like, let's go to the movie theater. We watched Dune. I'm like, wow, I'm watching hundreds of people trip out on the show. I was too. and so, but I left inspired by just when when I'm thinking about food in this way to that capacity, it is no less fantastical than that film.
Yeah.
Truly. Like, they're trying to capture all this water out of people, you know?
Yeah.
Wow, that's what I want to do to bones. Okay, biocharring. I'm going to start biocharring, you know? I'm going to start, like, biocharring these bones and covering cheese with the biochar. Like, it's a really fun pursuit, is going all in. So, anyhow, I guess that's what I was just simply alluding to.
Yeah. So, speaking of hunting.
Yeah.
Is hunting something that you're able to do right now in Montana soon? I mean, are you speaking more of like it's a part of your life because you have meat available that you had already previously hunted? Like, are you going to go on a spring bear hunt?
Right. My first, so like for hunting in the sense of hunting, my first hunting is going to be for the herbaceous perennials popping up. Then it's going to be the mushrooms coming. Fishing season, for sure at some point. And I won't hunt big game most likely until archery season, which is September, here anyway.
Okay.
Yeah. And, depending, and you know, I've taken a couple years off over the past five. It's not every single, more because I've really shifted our menu to more of the animal husbandry side of the menu. And, that takes up a lot of the time, and it also fills the freezer. And so, we are definitely that family that grew up on elk and deer. And so while I still eat them both when we have them, it's really nice to be paying attention to, you know, homemade bacons and pork and some other stuff also.
Yeah.
But yeah, traditionally I'll walk the elk woods. And, you know, I went once in archery season this year, and my hunt was so satisfying in so many different ways. I've been watching a spot at 9,000 feet. So it's a high basin spot where elk usually stay to avoid the bugs and stay cool. First snow hits and they start moving. And I've always thought, you know, I bet they're going to be here in archery season, and I never connected it. And this year I connected it at 40 yards to, there's a bull, 40 yards, scraping a tree. Wow. Thought he'd be here. And although some movement on our side triggered him and he was gone, it was just a beautiful experience in a socked in basin, 50 degrees, drizzly, bugling everywhere. And we walked out to not push the basin. And I ended up picking about 10 pounds of chanterelles on the way home and some huge bullets. And I felt like a king. I was pretty satisfied. You know, like I was pretty genuine. Like I just, even now, shit eating grin. Like I just, yeah. Wow, that was the largest haul of those mushrooms I've ever seen in my life, you know? And so I still have one more jar of pickled chanterelles left from that haul. And, yeah, so hunting sometimes is 7 years of thinking there would be something right there in that spot, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And you start walking at 3 a.m. and you kind of are calculating for years out, really. And so food, I think, has given me a certain sense of not necessarily needing to own a moment, if you will. It's sort of you create this entire moment, and then it compost its way back into the deal and dinner again, you know, especially if you've worked in restaurants, right? And you're just cranking the same type of story, thousands, hundreds. Thank goodness for wild foods and my connection to them. It really saved me from that burnout. I mentioned it kind of earlier on the call.
Yeah.
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 I totally get what you're saying, Eduardo. Last weekend was the last weekend of squirrel season here in Michigan.
Mm.
And me and my son put in, I think, like 25,000 steps for 2 days. Like each day, like 25,000 steps. And we got totally skunked, but I had like a blast, you know, like just the most fun time. And I got to pick a bunch of spring greens.
Yeah.
And it was like, I didn't leave feeling like, oh man, like I'm such a bad hunter. I just like left feeling like that was great. And I got a ton of exercise and I got to spend time with my son.
Yeah.
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 100%. I love it. I want to ask you about squirrel because I've never eaten squirrel, but I don't want to add insult to injury because you didn't harvest any squirrel, but sounds like you had a great time, so we can go there.
We have plenty of squirrels.
A lot of squirrels. So.
We have plenty of squirrel in the freezer. I was just trying to go for one last haul, you know?
Yeah. What are you making with squirrel? What's the choice?
I mean, for the most part.
Yeah.
We are cooking them in the crock pot with some bone broth, and I'm cooking them for like 6 to 8 hours and then pulling all the meat off and then using that in other recipes. And like Madeline, my lovely woman, she has, do you know what a pasty is? Like not a lot of people do. So it's like a UP, it's like a Finnish hot pocket.
It's a hand pie.
Yes.
You like that? Like that's me saying I know. No one can see this, but I like to Pac-Man my hand.
So she has, you know, historically actually like usually once a year will meticulously make us some squirrel pasties. And we're incredibly thankful for them. They're so good. Squirrel it just tastes like the dark meat on chicken, you know? It's amazing.
I love the dark meat on chicken. Nice. Is there fat to the skin? Is there skin? Is there any like grease coming off of that or flavor?
Not really.
The only reason I ask is when everyone says things taste like chicken, it's only because that is one of the most common proteins in our Anglo diet, folks.
Yeah.
In other parts of the world, they say it tastes like goat.
Yeah.
That's what they're eating the most of, you know? Like it's so just so interesting. But I have been butchering some roosters because we had too many over the last month or so. And I also, my food challenge these days is looking in the freezer and saying, okay, like gizzards, got to use them, got to move them up. Liver, got it. Okay, like doing some awfully good grinds coming up. And really the progression, as I call it, like it's like a food challenge is go to the freezer, commit, pull a couple things, timer starts now. Over the next 10 days, these will turn into X, right? So there's like a top round of whitetail in the fridge now thawing. I don't know. I think that's going to become some type of a roast deli meat type action because it's busy. Yes. Days are longer. Sandwiches need to happen.
Mm-hmm.
And so like the whole taste like chicken thing, I made chicken soup with all these chicken feet recently.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't taste like chicken. It tastes like chicken skin. Tastes like chicken fat. Well, because by volume, there wasn't a lot of muscle. So the flavor coming out of all the muscle is very different, actually, than the flavor coming out of bone, cartilage, tendon, or skin.
Yeah.
So like in culinary, like if you have chefiness coming into this for you is, and everyone else is, you know, when I recommend a bone broth or someone making bone broth, depending on the bone, size of the bone, you may or may not have any red meat left on those bones. And yet adding a little red meat is actually going to like sweeten the pot. It's going to actually give it a deeper flavor so that you're pulling not just from bone and cartilage, but from muscle, different structure altogether. It's just holding into a different nutrient pool, more blood, right?
Yeah.
And so this chicken foot soup that I had recently with local peas and local lentils, our garlic scape was delicious. And yeah, I was like, dang, this is ramen thick. Like, this is thick. And it was all the fat and cartilage and gelatin coming out of all the joints and knuckles.
Yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, what an adventure. Anyway.
Yeah. I do have to say, though, that I know that people say it tastes like chicken, but squirrel legitimately, like, so so much tastes like chicken that we've made squirrel and wild rice soup. And, my gal's mom ate it and we didn't tell her it was squirrel because she would have freaked out.
Yeah.
And she was like, oh, this is good chicken.
I'm so glad you like it.
Yeah. And she would have freaked out had she known. And honestly, a lot of the time she doesn't want to eat at our house because of the weird meats that we eat.
Oh, no, you know, I wouldn't mind that. You got to be open-minded.
Right. I served mushrooms to, I did a public-facing cooking demo up at a ski resort a little over a week ago, and this youngster came up to grab a taco, and it had a bunch of griddled oyster mushrooms and cremini and shiitakes on it with a little pumpkin seed sauce, and he was like, he recognized taco tostada, you know, gimme. So he goes to grab it, and I think I just overheard the chatter, him at, well, what is it? Oh, it's mushroom. I've never had a mushroom. And he did it, and he ate it, and he's like, I'm chewing it down. So now, like, so few folks have heard, there's lots of people milling around, and now everyone's got some attention on, there's like 10 of us now looking in a crowd of 100, but the 10 around him are like waiting for his reaction. Now I'm starting to sweat a little bit because what's going to happen? And he's like, I think I like mushrooms. Wow. Yeah, what a moment, you know? And anyway, so sometimes what a brave thing to just eat and trust or just eat. An adventure, you know? Yeah. So it's makes sense that when we're cooking for folks, especially the pressure to I mean my favorite meals to cook are the simplest ones, and usually for like my parents or my grandma, or you know, just these small little tokens of something. And sometimes you just gotta sneak a little thing in like squirrel.
Yeah.
So one of the things I was thinking of, squirrel tacos or carnitas, and take them and actually like braise the meat first, take it out, and then like bear fat or whatever. But what I saw you do, which inspired me on the show, Big Sky Kitchen, is the clay pot.
Oh, yeah.
I've never seen anybody cook in a clay pot on a stove before like that, which is fascinating. I like it. And now I told my wife I am seeking one out and I'm going to get one. And I will take either bear fat or whatever I have rendered lard. Actually, I've got tallow rendering right now as we speak. And but my wife won't let me do it inside the house anymore. So I've got a big pot with a turkey fryer going outside right now. But taking it and putting the fat in there and crisping it up and then utilizing that with some spices and stuff. And speaking of that, if we're doing carnitas, what type of spices are we adding to that mix?
Depends on who you're asking. Yeah, you're asking me, so self-answered question. traditionally, carnitas is really like, listen, okay, so carnitas, as I know it, you know, you're seasoning pork, whole muscle cuts, full utility of the animal, trotter nose, skin, everything. Gets cooked in a giant vat of its own fat. Yep. So, right. So you're taking rendered lard and yet you're salting that meat prior. That's really it. Usually it's just salted, right? Then fried till it's absolutely, you know, either falling apart and or choppable, right? And usually carnitas is both. It's crispy on the outside and soft, moist, and fried through like a turkey on the inside. And yet it's the salsas, the relishes, the pickled onions that are going to add those accompanied flavors that I think is more where your question comes from. Like, okay, what should I marinate with? What should I do this with it? That's the traditional answer for what to season your carnitas with. My non-traditional answer is my sister. We have a recipe published on our website. MontanaMex.com, you'll find a cochinitas recipe. So cochinita is typically done in a pibil or earthen oven, and you're cooking in a pit. And so it's a wet method for pulled, shredded, totally, you know, whole animal cookery or whole vegetable cookery. But, you know, I'm talking about sort of usually a wild javelina or a domestic pig. That's cochinita pibil. So our family's from the Yucatan, where cochinita's from, pibil. And carnitas is more of a North Central Mexico dish. Yet, who doesn't love fried pork? I do. they serve it all day long in the Yucatan. And so my sister started doing this hybrid. And so she would take chili powder. She would take garlic, she would take cilantro, she would take salt, pepper, orange peel sometimes, orange zest, orange juice, and make a paste and score the meat she was working with, usually a bone-in pork shoulder, and or a huge deer leg or a ham of elk or whatever it was, depending on the event, the meal. I like a shoulder. I love seeing that flat iron cartilage get all jellied. And so she would then hard, not fry, but hard grill or smoke that piece of meat with all of those seasonings and whatnot on it. And then she would take it and she would slow cook it in a Dutch oven, or, you know, slow cook in the oven with some citrus juice to give it moisture wrapped up.
Okay.
Then she would turn the heat up, pull it off, take the lid off, and let all that juice evaporate. So the fat remaining would now fry the braised meat, right? So yeah, more of that carnitas like finish.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And that's my sister's cochinitas. And it's so the recipe's on our site. So if anyone wants to try it, that's a baseline offering of what like seasoning blends generally. But so
you just inspired me. I got an idea now and I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna pull the recipe with the rub and I'm gonna rub the swirls because I think I still have a few days left, Clay. So I'm gonna blast and I'm gonna get like a 2-day limit or whatever. Mm-hmm. And then I'm gonna sous vide them. I'm going to take them and sous vide them, pull the meat off, and then put them, if I get a clay pot, put them in the fat and crisp them up.
Wow.
Lovely.
I'm inspired. I am inspired right now.
That's decadent. Let me add to the clay pot part, because that's where this generated. That's was just the genesis of this is what I would note. We can cook in lots of different things. Cooking in clay is fairly ancient. For the most part, I think it's irrefutable. Mm-hmm. It's carved on walls and places, you know, like, I mean, it's out there, like we were doing this. And this is a conversation about food, and I will keep this short winded, but I believe that parts of our lives historically were so integrated into what we did that we benefited in ways that were learned, generationally passed down, and we have sort of severed that core understanding in the last generous 200 years, really, as like a focused end of, you know, the small farm, the land economic, and more industrialized distributed economic, and so in losing the natural time and space with wild yeast in our noses and pollens in our faces and sun and air and all of the exposure to the elements, we have now moved more into a supplemental way of living where we supplement. Everything is a nutritional label that tells us what we need to add back up to what was foundational way back then, you know?
Yeah.
And so when I'm taking a lava rock and I'm throwing some peppercorns in it or pumpkin seeds or crushed rose hip, well, I don't know, whatever it is, and I'm grinding it up with another piece of stone, not only is it just terrifically enjoyable to my brain, it is demanding of my forearm, and it reminds me of what it takes to eat. So it's the crank and grind. It's sort of like the tithe, you know. And then somewhere deep in my psyche, I just seem to believe that a tiny little mini pieces of lava stone are going into my body. And that is part of me leaching like real true minerality and like other goodness. And so when you're cooking in the clay pot, Luke, which I know you will, I trust this is going to happen in your world. You'll taste it. You'll smell it. And then somewhere in your placebo and in your Luke's world, you tell me what happens. But I know when I cook in clay pot, I just feel, am I Merlin? Who am I? You know, like, who am I? I want to use the big wood spoon with the deer hoof handle. Listen, you know, and I'm going to take a photo of it with my iPhone 12 and tweet it to the world. So, like, these are the times we live in, people. Get a clay pot and go back in time and discover something absolutely authentically human, which is to just take earth and cook in earth and have it literally heat itself up and squeeze all kinds of yummy goodness into your beans or your carnitas, and somehow it's a part of our equation, you know.
Yeah,
I don't think our bodies speak Teflon.
Yeah. Well, they do. Unfortunately,
they do now. Right? Maybe.
Yeah. You know. But yeah, if we can get that goodness back, I mean, gosh, cast iron is such a huge part of my life. Why can't clay be part of it too? It only makes sense.
Yeah. Eduardo, I know you got only a few more minutes of your time before you got to eat your dinner, but I do have a question that I've been asking all the guests recently, and we got to carry on the tradition. What is the worst wild food that you've ever eaten?
What is the worst wild food I've ever eaten?
It could be plant, animal, doesn't matter.
I know, I'm trying to get there.
Your chef brain won't allow it.
I just don't know. I don't know what it's kind of an empty folder right now. It just says zero items.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll say this. I've never commented on it before. Okay. But one is false Solomon seal berries. I've eaten those. They're pretty terrible. And then also there's those white berries that are supposedly edible. I don't know what they are.
Oh, silk berries.
Silk, yeah.
Or dogwood. Maybe
terrible.
It's dogwood.
No, it was berries that grow like little shoots out of the ground, but they bend over. Those are pretty terrible too. And it's kind of like a toss up between the two of like all the things that I've consumed that are pretty gross, and then about 64% of gooseberries that I've eaten also are pretty terrible as well.
That's a very precise percentage.
Yeah, it's about 64%. That's where I'm at.
I did a skit for my company where I pretended I was a doctor and I fixed people's recipes and stuff. And so I would say, Luke, I would say, well, sounds like your gooseberries need to be vinegared. Discover where they shine and meet them there. Because I want to play ball, I racked my brain. I've tried very hard and conclusively. The fair and honest comment I can bring back into this as a closure is that I am really looking forward to dandelion season here.
Yes.
Coming up because of its absolute commonplace nature. And yet, you know, I love bitter greens. And so I recognize that, well, why am I not using more of this dandelion in some capacity? It's bitter as heck. Right. Mm-hmm. How young do I got to catch it? You know, it's not even out of the ground yet. It's still bitter, you know?
Yeah.
And so where, you know, capering the buds before they've bloomed, taking the blossoms and throwing them into fritters, I'm working towards loving the greens more. Mm-hmm. And yet it may be as like in an onion bhaji. It may be in a saag paneer. It may be, you know, in my green drink in the morning. Don't know, but it's bitter. And I recognize that, you know, even I'm a liver eater. I love liver through and through and through. And yet cow elk liver is pretty dang big. So I'm learning, you know, chicken, right? So not wild food. I know the chicken, the other ones are, but forever figuring out how to use all the bits and pieces. So nothing super gross, in my opinion, I've ever really come across, but the bitterness, the pungenciness of livers, I'm looking for ways to find that where they shine.
Yeah.
But what I know is when you take, you know, a percentage of liver and you grind it into your grind without even consideration of anything other than this is my grind, and now it weighs 20% more than it did. Hooray. When I've fed that grind mix, and it's not just pure liver, you can throw kidneys, you can throw a lot of the things in there, the heart, but why would you? The comment back is not necessarily a flavor thing, especially if it's not the profile or the pitch, but God, I feel good, right? Like, what are those meals that just make you feel good, right?
Yeah.
We all know how it feels to wake up after three IPAs. So like that's telling. So same thing when we eat. What's it tell you? What's it tell us? So that's anyway, trying to play. There we go.
Yeah.
Thanks. This was super enjoyable. I must have missed the memo, Clay, that this was a two-person, three-person scenario.
Oh.
I feel like I won. It was nice to meet you, Luke, and thank you for being so generous with your compliments on our show, Big Skid Kitchen. I genuinely look at a team of many that made that happen, and it's such an authentic representation of like 18 artists coming together and say, let's make this show really feel exactly what it's like to just cook a meal. So really thank you for sharing the binge. That's what we hoped people would do. You know, how else are you going to get your, you know, for anyone that, pick up the mic, folks, pick up the knife, pick up the mic and share what you're cooking and eating with others. It's never not in season to do that.
Yeah. So how can people get a hold of you though, or follow you on social media and stuff like that?
Or buy
products. I'm mostly dormant everywhere, but Chef Eduardo Garcia on Instagram is where I give a genuine interpretation of what life's like over here. And my company, Montana Mex, is, you know, my baby, 12, 13 years now of really finding our way. What's our purpose in the food business and the food industry, from distributing our products through our website to more of our deep calling, which is through food, we educate and bring experience so that we have more fighters at the table for really strong eco sheds and water systems and equity. Starts with education for us. So that's a big part of what we do. So please pay attention to our company and say hi, ask questions, be in touch. Yeah. And you guys, thank you. This was really enjoyable. Appreciate it.
Thank you. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, exactly.
Once again, thank you so much for listening to the Publicly Challenged podcast. I hope you enjoyed the show, and if you did, please subscribe on whatever platform it is you're listening to. Also, if you could leave a review, that would help us out. And you could check us out on Instagram or at publiclychallenged.com. And once again, thank you so much for listening to the show.